Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. That the provision of health services is a critical and significant mission within each branch of the U.S. military. The U.S. Department of Navy's Bureau of Medicine and Surgery has a long and cherished tradition of serving and safeguarding the health of its service members and their families. In fact, the foundation of Navy medicine is force health protection, and that is ensuring the availability of a medically ready, healthy, and fit force. It is what it does. It's why it exists. Whether at sea or on the battlefield or at home, Navy medicine also plays a central role in the most effective joint casualty care and management system in military history, a system that has saved thousands of lives that otherwise would have been lost on the battlefield. What are Navy medicine's strategic priorities? What is force health protection? How is the continuum of care for military personnel being enhanced and strengthened? And how is medical research and development helping Navy medicine? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Vice Admiral Matthew Nathan, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy. So, Admiral Nathan, thank you for joining us today. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here with both you and Gio.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Gio Patterson. Gio, welcome, as always.
Thank you.
So, Admiral, many are familiar with the U.S. Navy, but may not be as familiar with the U.S. Navy Bureau of Medicine and Surgery, also known as Navy Medicine. Would you share some of the history with us, and when was it established, and how does it support DOD's overall mission?
Well, Navy medicine formally came into line in the 1840s as the Bureau of Medicine and Surgery. We were designed at first to basically coordinate the activities of healthcare at sea, and throughout the centuries have migrated to be in care of the sailors, the Marines, their families, those who have retired and left a legacy for us to follow. And now we are very much diversified into significant research areas. But I like to tell people, our medical service is really responsible for providing care above the ocean in aviation, on the ocean in our surface Navy, below the ocean in our submarine force, and then on land as we support the Marines and the special operators such as SEAL groups and EOD groups. So we have a pretty wide portfolio that's developed throughout the years. And our job is really one of two missions. And it's one to be ready. And when people ask me what business I'm in, I like to tell them I'm in the readiness business. My job is to be ready for the next improvised explosive device that goes off in Afghanistan. My job is to be ready for the next mom who's gone into labor and needs her delivery at the threshold of one of our hospitals. I consider both to be paramount in readiness. And so there's an expectation on the Navy Medical Department, both from my bosses, the Chief of Naval Operations and the Commandant of the Marine Corps, to be there when they need us and to absolutely bring the best we have.
Admiral, with such a broad and critical mission, would you give us a sense of the scale of operation for Navy medicine? How is your office organized? What's the size of your staff? And perhaps give us a sense of the geographical disbursement of Navy medicine?
Sure. So we have a motto, Michael, in Navy medicine, which says world-class care anytime, anywhere. And because we are a maritime-centric force and we support a maritime-centric force, the Navy and Marine Corps, we basically call ourselves the away team. Our job is to be away from home. Unlike perhaps the Army and the Air Force, which are more garrison-based services, and then when needed, deploy en masse to a foreign shore or to an area of conflict, the Navy's job is to be out and about most of the time, patrolling the waterways and the littoral areas and to be engaged in trying to put out small fires before they become big ones, be it somewhere in the Persian Gulf or the South China Sea or the Atlantic or the Pacific. So Navy medicine must be agile to be with them. So if somebody said to me, where do you like to sort of stay in one place? Our answer is we don't like to stay in one place. We like to have bases from which we work with, but our job is to be out and about and be very responsive for any need that may come up. That said, we're organized with regions at home. We have the Navy Medicine East region headquartered out of Portsmouth, Virginia, and our tertiary care facility there. Navy Medicine West region out of San Diego, Navy Medical Center San Diego, and the National Capital Authority region out of the Bethesda area. And those are our three regions that support and headquarter all of our military treatment facilities, which include tertiary hospitals, family practice teaching hospitals, and smaller hospitals scattered throughout the world. And then we are task organized through our support to the warfighter as we provide Navy medicine, what we call surgeons, to the various fleets. So the Fleet Forces Command and the Pacific Command have surgeons that represent their medical needs to them. And we have surgeons for all our numbered fleets, the 4th Fleet, the 5th Fleet, the 6th Fleet, the 7th Fleet. I had a job once as the 7th Fleet surgeon. We have a public health system, which is headquartered in Virginia, and that's responsible in large part for the preventive medicine efforts that go on to maintain a warfighting capability. And it varies from protection for insect and infectious disease vectors to keep troops from becoming ill or injured, all the way to public safety, looking at vehicle mishaps, looking at any sort of foodborne type issues. And then we have our research units.
Admiral, now that you've given us a view of the global operation, maybe you could tell us more about your specific responsibilities as a U.S. Navy Surgeon General and the Chief of the Navy BuMed. What are your specific responsibilities and duties?
Well, my job is to be responsible to the Chief of Naval Operations and the Commandant of the Marine Corps. And informally, I would say that my job is to make sure that we have the best medical team available to both prepare the warfighter in the event they need to go into harm's way, to protect the warfighter in the event that they have something occur while in harm's way or while in deployment, and then to maintain a confidence in the Navy and Marine Corps that their families will be taken care of. I think both Michael and Jill, you would agree that it's very hard for you to keep your mind on the job if you were here or anywhere else, if you have a loved one who is suffering or who is ill and you can't be there. You'd be very preoccupied by that. So we do everything we can to instill confidence in our troops and our crews that while they're away from home, or even at home, that we're going to be there for their families, we're going to be there to take care of them, and they can concentrate on other things because the medical care is not going to be an issue. Formally, my task is really to provide the manning and the training and the equipping of medical forces that lie resident in the United States Navy.
So, Admiral, regarding your role and responsibility, what are your top challenges? What are the three top challenges you face, and have you sought to address them?
Well, so, Michael, it's a great question because we're coming now off of over 10 years of war. This is unheralded. We've not seen this in our country's history. It has done a couple things. One, it's led us to some tremendous innovations in combat casualty care and in deployment medicine. But it's also been very taxing. And it's created a cadre of servicemen and servicewomen who have challenges that we hadn't seen or hadn't seen to this degree in such protracted warfare. There is an expectation, and I believe it's quite legitimate, on me and on my Navy Medical Department that we be a marquee organization when it comes to peacetime health care. So my other challenge is I have to maintain a vibrant readiness force that can deploy at a moment's notice and that can be ready to operate in what could be an unfamiliar environment. So my challenge is to maintain the quality care that somebody seeks in one of our medical facilities and at the same time be able to deploy and maintain first-class combat support care in a hostile or even simply an austere environment. Like everything else in healthcare, and we're not immune from the American healthcare system, it's expensive. And the cost of healthcare to the Department of Defense among all the services has been escalating at unprecedented rates. And so the Secretary of Defense and the secretaries of the services, as well as the executive branch, is depending on us to look for new and innovative ways to reduce the cost of health care in the Department of Defense, just as the leadership of this nation is looking for some sort of game changer to try to bring down the cost to the average American for health care and to increase access. We're looking for innovative ways that we can give some resources back to the Department of Defense and without sacrificing any of the quality that people have become accustomed to in military health care.
Admiral, along with the challenges you've encountered leading Navy medicine, can you also discuss your unanticipated or unexpected surprises? To that end, what has surprised you the most since taking over this role?
Well, Gio, it's a great question because if you'd asked me 3 years ago, would I be looking at the normal budget challenges that occur in healthcare, I'd say absolutely. If you'd say, are we going to season that gingerly with sequestration and continuing resolutions and try to figure out what won't be involved in those, we hadn't really expected that. When I used to speak to civic organizations over a year ago and they'd say, what do you think the impacts of sequestration are going to be? I, like many leaders, would say throughout the government, would say, well, hopefully it won't come to that. We think that maybe sequestration won't be a big issue. But it has come to that. And I will say that my leaders have been very supportive in trying to minimize the effects of sequestration when it comes to the provision of medical care and the ability to protect our fighting forces. We're moving resources around and we're shifting assets so that nobody who's deployed or nobody who's in an austere environment will feel any effect of this. But nonetheless, depending on how long and how significant the budget situation goes on, my job is to work through that. My job is to give a coherent plan to my boss on how I'm going to meet their mission and yet be faithful to some of the budget challenges that we have.
What are Navy medicine's strategic priorities? We will ask Vice Admiral Matthew Nathan, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.